promised land if they live righteously.
It is time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and this is a temple ticker. It is not only a temple ticker, it is the temple ticker prediction episode. We need a fancier name for all that, but I welcome in Corey K. Ward, the Pharaoh himself. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Ritchie. How are you doing?
I am well. I am excited. A couple reasons. One, to be able to visit with you and hear your predictions about temples of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Two, I like to see how your hair looks before you get ready for the day, and I get that privilege today. Three, Zoom, on which we are recording, has a new logo, and I got to see that as I updated my computer this morning, as we were supposed to start a few minutes ago, and then it said, nope, we're doing this now. I was like, oh, cool. Well, great. We're getting a new logo, and I get to see it. And four, because we get to talk all about temples of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Anything new, exciting, fun, different, crazy for you since we last chatted?
No, I think it's pretty similar. I don't know.
People can anticipate hearing from Corey K. Ward probably as soon as we can after General Conference, where we'll just do an episode about each of the sites of the temple that are announced. So if you you don't hear any temples being announced at the Spring 24 General Conference, you're not going to hear from Corey K. Ward. But if there are, you can anticipate an episode as soon as we can get our butts together and say, where are they? And we'll be like, well, the 72 that were announced at this General Conference are located in, and then we just go through it. So look forward to that. The temple predictions will be at the end of this episode. We go travel now to the Manti Temple, the first for this temple ticker news.
Yeah, the historic Manti Temple opened up for tours after the renovation that they had. I think they said it was 29 months that total they were closed. They had a media day on March 11th. Do you know anything about that, Richie?
I do. As a matter of fact, I got to go to the media day. It was
wow.
It was interesting. So I went down there, and you never know from coming from Salt Lake going to Manti how long it's going to take. So I got there a little bit early. A little pro tip, not that Miller's in Manti is bad, but you have more food options if you eat in Ephraim than if you try and eat in Manti. That's a little pro tip. Second is, when you go to the temple open house, even if you think you're being very kind and a little bit funny, do not bring donuts for everybody that's going to go on the media tour. They do not care for that. They do not think it's funny. They do not think it's hospitable. They look at you and go, And then lastly, on media tours, remind me from here on out, you're supposed to wear a shirt and tie. It's
okay.
They don't tell you that, but it is very much, if you show up as I did, in just a nice button-down shirt, that they do not appreciate the lack of a tie.
Some good insight, Richie.
Yeah, sounds like it. Nothing about the temple necessarily. I mean, I'll sprinkle that in as we talk about it. But fun. I forget how beautiful the location that is the setting of the Manti Temple is. It really is just like up on a hill. It's so gorgeous, and it is the very thing that I think even non-members that live in Manti are so very proud of. It is the thing that they go, yes, finally it's open. We love how it is. We love the traffic it brings to town. We love the beauty that it is at night. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, sounds like a great place to have a pageant. I don't know if they've ever thought of that.
Well, I'll get to that as we get into the tour. But I have some pageant intrigue is maybe the way to talk about it as we get into the tour. So, they let us in. We got to go through. I got to meet historian Emily Utt, which I was denied an interview with her, and then got to see her the next day and was like, what's the deal with that? She's like, I'm busy. It's not my people. It was my handlers that didn't let me do it. But she's got everything going on with Manti, and then certainly with Kirtland, which we'll talk about too.
Well, it's not that she was on KSL.
Oh, I know. And she was on Salt Lake Tribune as well, on Mormon Land most recently.
But if they spelled her name wrong.
What?
Instead of Utt,
wrong.
They put an H in front of Utt. So it said Hutt, Emily Hutt.
Perfect. I'm sure. Well, listen, Emily, we would have spelled and pronounced your name right if you would have come into the Cultural Hall. So Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The first thing that you put on this is that you can tell very much the time period in which it was built, that it is not a wheelchair accessible building at all.
Yeah, if you look at the photos, and if you attend the open house, you can see that in between the ordinance rooms that you progress through, there are staircases that are pretty, steep. And for a long time, people have had to go up those stairs. And I actually even heard that some elderly people that were kind of immobilized would drive a long way to another temple if they couldn't go up those stairs. So be aware that if you go on a tour of this temple, they said that these rooms of the temple cannot be accommodated by wheelchairs. So you can still see a lot, most of the temple, but there's a few rooms that you won't be able to see.
Well, and one of the best parts of the temple is walking up the, I don't know, 70 steps or whatever to the top of the spiral staircase. There's no, like, I was barely able to do that as an able-bodied person. They don't have a way for, it's hard for me to walk upstairs for you to get up there. There was like a fast track, if you kept to the inside, you could go up a little faster and the people that took a little bit longer, but were committed to doing it, they'd stay on the outside. But being able to see that staircase alone, it takes a certain amount of shape, and people get up to the top and go,
Oof,
I sure did
yeah.
feel a little longer than how many? 70 steps or whatever the number was. Is that all that was? COVID, like all the things people just, it was, but gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
So yeah, I think this pretty much confirms that the reason why, or at least a big reason why there's going to be a new temple in Ephraim is to provide a pretty, only about 10 minutes away by driving to get to another temple that is will be perfectly accessible to everyone. So.
Well, and I got the feeling too that there it's just sort of like the Manti Temple, that they, not that they don't want a lot of people to use it, because I think that they do, but it was very much like a, well, be careful around this. Well, be know that this is precious and old. And I think in Ephraim it'll be like, come in, let's go, have a seat. It's not to say that it's not as sacred and all that those things, but it just seems like the way that they try to kind of treat Manti is like, your grandma's treasured necklace that, yeah, you can wear it and it's very special. And Ephraim is like, that is your pair of khaki pants and your durable, wrinkle-free Stafford, button-up shirt that you just put on and let's get to work.
Yeah, interesting take.
Yeah, I don't know.
So if you plan to go to this open house, it's open through April 5th, which is just right before dental conference. And last week on social media, a lot of people showed that there was long lines outside on last Saturday. A lot of people showed up and were, I heard up to 3 hours people were waiting to get in. So plan accordingly if you go on a Saturday.
Interesting, as you made your way to the inside, people talk a lot about the murals and the creation room and some of that. Let's get into some of those things.
Yeah, something I first found interesting was the chapel that where you wait for a session. It has this 1906 copy of a painting called Jesus Blesses the Children, and it's definitely from the era because you look at the baby that I think Jesus is holding, and basically looks like a man's face on this baby, which is pretty typical of old art. So it really sets the tone of like the era the temple was built.
Then you put on here about the framed green apron of Isaac Morley. That was super cool.
Tell me about it, because I haven't seen it up closely before.
You're
No,
walking
anyways.
through and you just kind of go, what in the, it's framed, it's very prominently placed. And I think almost it looks like the green is sort of dyed onto it, or maybe like colored onto it, whereas today, nowadays, we have green fabric, green material that it's made out of. It does not look like that, but the intricacies of each like leaf or part of the apron, it's incredible. And just the fact to know that it's like that's what that is, and that's right there. And you think of Morley and the connection of bringing that all the way back to Kirtland, and the fact that that person came all the way from there, came all the way here, and was such an instrumental hand in the church in that area as well. It's pretty, it's It's a cool that sort of connection, and you feel it too as you get into the chapel where they have an assembly hall, just like the Kirtland Temple, with the pews, the podiums on either side, and you're able to feel that sort of era of the very early church to the early church in Manti. It's kind of cool to see that continuum, feel that continuum between the connectedness between the early saints in you know, the East, and then the saint there. It was cool, very, very cool.
Interesting, yeah. And I like that they left it up for the open house, because there's been eras in the church where during an open house they even like removed the altars in the ceiling rooms. This is like in the early 2000s when they didn't even when they took a picture of a ceiling room, they would just take out the altar for the open house. But now it seems like the church is not like there's pictures on the internet of like an apron, so like it's not something to hide anymore. So
yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, well, and I think in things like that, you know, as I do, that when people go, hey, that's not what that room looks like, that you draw way more attention to it than if you just said, here is what this room looks like. And people go, okay, there's an altar. That makes sense. Married at an altar. Okay. There's not an altar. Why is there not an altar? Is it because they keep the goats? Like, all the stuff comes out when people try and kind of hide the things, or people think that things are being hidden. So I think it's just the era in which we live that they're pretty forthright about it. In the baptistry, I like that you have one of the things that I noticed. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So in the baptistry, there's like basically, I think, three kind of large murals. You have one of them, the baptism of Jesus, another one, the baptism of Oliver and Joseph. And then there's one of a Book of Mormon scene, probably like the Waters of Mormon, just around. And then what's really cool is that on the ceiling above the baptismal font, there's like a dove painted, kind of symbolizing, you know, the baptism of Jesus, where the dove descended like the Holy Ghost. And then around those murals, there's some scriptures that are painted on the wall. One of them comes from Matthew 3, another one comes from 3rd Nephi, and then one is quoted as Pearl of Great Price, 5670. And if you're thinking there's not really a book called The Pearl of Great Price that has chapters like that anymore, so trying to figure out where that came from.
Yeah, so here is what you need to do. If you get to go down, and I wish I could remember this woman's name, but I just look for look for the docent, look for the host that is the oldest person that is there. She's 86 years old. I interviewed her for a former episode of the Culture Hall. She was instrumental with the Manti pageant. I wish I could remember her name. I didn't put her name in the show notes. It's episode 328 if people want to listen to it. But she pointed out, because I didn't actually happen to notice that with the Pearl of Great Price. And she's like, do you see that? The chapter and verse of the Pearl of Great Price? And I was like, yes, yeah, I do. Don't ask them about that. They don't want to talk about that.
I love it. Well, what I did was check. This verse comes from Joseph History. So I was thinking maybe it's like a page number. Page 56.
It actually used to be broken out in chapters is how she explained it to me. I don't know that, but at some point the Pearl of Great Price contained more than it did. And then we sort of took some different things out and then didn't make it, you know, chapter and verse.
Yeah, some things were added to the Doctrine and Covenants and stuff like that. Some things were taken out. I did look up the original, the first edition, Pearl of Great Price, that was published in England in 1851. Mm-hmm. And this verse is found on page 46. So it's not the page number of the first edition. What I would assume is that there's a second edition, I think in the 1880s, about when the temple was being dedicated. So I haven't found a copy of that. So it would be interesting to see where that goes.
I'll tell you what, though, super cool, though, to see. It's interesting to see the scriptures on the wall like that. I don't know why. We don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't do it in other places. It just felt sort of significant and unique to see those verses on the wall. I realize we're taking a lot of time with a bunch of this stuff, but there is a significant amount to see. Lots of people talking about the creation room, which is worth mentioning.
Yeah, the creation room is the oldest mural found in any temple of the church. It was painted by C.C.A. Christensen. He was a Danish convert. He joined the church in 1850, and while he was there, he studied at the Royal Art Institute of Copenhagen. He actually dropped out so that he could immigrate to Utah. And these murals, you know, had years of repairs. People just put on some plaster. There's a lot of dirt and grime and varnish that they had to basically remove inch by inch. His murals were trying to attempt to visualize what Genesis looked like, and he didn't really have an idea of that, so he sought out different ideas, and he found there was a book called The World Before the Deluge, and it had pictures of what maybe dinosaurs looked like. And so he copied a lot of those sketches in that book and put them on the walls of this of the temple. So that's why you can see dinosaurs on the walls of the Nanite temple.
Yeah, interesting. The way that they framed it in the tour is he was there and he had studied at the Royal Art Institute and had been able to do like the section or the time about like painting or sketching people, but he hadn't gotten into the part about animals or any of those kind of things. And so then he gets to Manti and they're like, "Hey, do this." And he's like, "This book, okay. They look like this. I can sort of make it look like that." And also several CCA Christensen relatives, descendants. It seemed like half the tour that I was on were descendants or relatives of CCA Christensen. So just thousands of people that are still in the church from this individual, this convert. So,
Was incredible.
yeah.
So originally the garden room and the world room had different types of murals. But then in the 1940s, the church decided to replace those murals. So the oldest one is the creation room, but then the garden room and the world room were painted in the 1940s. They're not as old as this one. But Robert Sheppard did the ones in the garden room as well as the baptistry. It was the same artist. And he, yeah, just a bunch of animals. A bunch of tree plants and everything you find in the garden. You see the two trees in of the Garden of Eden, the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of life. And so that's pretty typical of what you find in old temples.
And then
And
we
then
into Minerva Tykert's, which is obviously a lot of attention paid towards that.
yeah, these ones are it was interesting that they kept the CCA Christensen murals because they were actually painted just on the plaster of the wall. And so a lot of people thought this would be hard to preserve, but they did it. The one that Minerva Tiger painted in the world room painted on canvas. So they're a little, I'm sure, a little bit easier to preserve. She was the first woman commissioned to paint a temple, a mural in any temple. So that's interesting. If you go in that room, it's pretty intimidating. It's like a 60-foot long room. The ceilings are 24 feet high. So you have a lot of space to work on. She was very intimidated by a lot of space. And I'll link an article to a BYU Studies article that talks about the history of this mural and how she went about doing it. She got paid just $4,000, which included all the paint that she needed to buy. She was only 5'2", so she found it pretty exhausting to climb up all the scaffolding all day. She, by that time, she was kind of an elderly woman. She even fell off the scaffolding once. And they said that she missed a few hours of work to go to the doctor to see her arm. But then a few hours later, she was back and painting. A lot of the people expected her to take a whole year to do this because other temple murals had taken about that long. But she put a self-imposed deadline of, I only want to be here a month. I don't want to be here that long.
Yeah, because she
And
had to be away from family. And so she's like, listen, I need to get back to my family. I'll get this done real quick.
whenever an endowment session came through, back then there was only like maybe two a day. Whenever they came through, they had to take breaks so that they could do that. But other than that, they were in the temple all day. She eventually did get some assistance, a couple of assistants to help her do the painting. So they painted this mural has 120 figures, and there's 4,000 square feet, and they did that in 23 working days. So she did return a few times the following year to make some touch-ups and everything.
Yeah. It's some of the things just to kind of highlight and then go into some of the other part of it is the Tower of Babel on the back, Joseph in Egypt, Moses, a golden calf, pilgrim sailing. It's interesting. I think it's on the south wall that there used to be when Minerva Tykert originally painted it, there were words that were painted along the bottom. And I want to say it was David O. McKay saw the words that she had painted there and said, "No, thank you." So painted over them. The lady that I mentioned that I went on the tour with, She leans over and she says, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but there were a series of words that were painted along the bottom, and I have what the words are. Anyway, she's written a book about it. I'll make sure that I include that in the show notes, but she's kind of like the insider's look at all things Manti Temple. And she's doing the tour. She's committed. She's 86 years old. She's committed to running the tours every day because she feels like it's God's calling to her. She's an amazing individual. I'm sad I can't remember her name, but I tried to look at notes and couldn't find it. But there is a lot going on. If you're familiar with Minerva Tykert and how she always has the, it's a like a shawl, a paisley shawl. You can see that on one of the individuals on the south wall that's okay. there. And then she also is known for having a really deep red figure and focus in all of her paintings. And you see that, I thought that was interesting. You see that right by the door that would be on the east wall as you go up into the next room. And since it's symbolic of Christ, it's sort of like follow towards Christ and then go through the doorway into the next room. You could spend, and I wish we could have spent more time, even on a tour where we did take a lot of time in these things. You could easily spend a whole lecture day and let's look at this and what about this. And then, of course, the thing that I think people will most prominently see is you sit down in this room and you look towards the east and there's an Indian brave that is more than life size on the wall, full headdress, absolutely gorgeous and significant to be looking towards as you're in that room. I found it really, really, really significant for that.
Yeah, I really like that it's symbolic. You have the side where you have like the old prophets, Abraham, Jacob, Moses, and then you have the pilgrims. And then on the other side, you have basically what's seen as the Gentiles, starting with Esau. Then you have like the Orient, the Asian, and the Middle Eastern areas, the Crusaders. You have then Columbus. And then in the shadows of kind of that those people, you have like what's known as, they call them shadowy figures, but it's like basically there's homeless people, there's people that are begging, kind of like the dark parts of the world. And then you have those on both sides. And then coming from, both of them came from the Tower of Babel. And then they're traveling together into the new world, and they come into the American continent, where you have the Indian brave with his arms outstretched, kind of welcoming everyone here. And then right above him, you see like a picture of a city, probably like the city of Zion, but it looks like Manti, basically, the map. So yeah, just the converging of both worlds into one area. I really like that symbolism.
It's the rewriting of history, Corey. That's not the way that it was. There are definitely people that are like, this is offensive in the way that it's presented. I've read and gone down those rabbit holes of like, what? Just because we painted this way doesn't mean that they felt this way. But it's good to be able to go and experience for yourself and just see the beauty in the work that was presented.
Yeah, and if you didn't know that this whole year there's been an exhibit at the Church Art Library up for Minerva Tykert, and they have some copies of these murals in that museum. So if you wanted to spend some more time looking at those, you could see that until July is when it's open.
The next thing that you have, and I think this is cool because this is another thing that they don't mention. So you get up into the celestial room, and during the tour, they're very assertive in saying, "Let's shut our mouths, please, and thank you," as you get into the room. And there's a ceiling room that is right off of the celestial room. There's actually a couple of them. They're fairly small. One in particular, it's like if you only knew a couple of people could be in there. I think there's like 8 chairs or something like that. But you walk in this room and you go, there is something significantly different about this room than adjacent to it is another ceiling room. It's also beautiful. It's also sacred. It's also, you know, finely done. But the one in particular that you walk in, there's like tile work and it just felt different. And the lady walking me through the tour leans over and goes, I am not supposed to tell you this. And then says, And do not ask them any questions about this, but this used to be a holy of holies. And I was like, oh, and it makes sense. It is an absolute, I'm not sure if they have pictures of this particular room, the holy of holies. It is so unreal. It is a tangible difference as you step into that room, feeling of the spirit, sacredness, even just like quiet, I guess, would be the way I would describe it. Just incredible. Worth. I honestly think worth going through the tour just to be able to see that room.
Wow. Yeah. The church did release like a video of some rooms in the temple, and you do see it in that video. I'll provide a link that has a screenshot of that. But yeah, it's kind of like a domed area above the altar, the ceiling of this altar. So yeah, I know a lot of, I think a few prophets were hidden out in Manti for a while when they were running for polygamy. So I think that's kind of what it's seen as, a place where the prophet could go. Similar to what happened in the Salt Lake Temple later on.
And the door, when you go in, like it doesn't even look like a door, and you just, oh, I'm just joking. That place can hide. It's like, no, there's nobody here. Nobody in here. No.
Well, something that Emily Utt, in one of the interviews that she did, pointed is that she felt like a lot didn't even change in this renovation. Most of the interior work of these ordinance rooms and the celestial room, the ceiling room, were pretty similar. They just replaced the curtains, maybe some of the carpet. And then, in the ordinance rooms, they installed projectors, and yep, they have a screen that can come down to basically watch the endowment film because there's no actors anymore. And then in the room, the veil room going into the celestial room, they put these big screens, these TV screens, basically, because now how the endowment is structured is that we watch basically instruction about how to go through the veil. And so they added those big screens into that room. So other than that, a few technology items, this is a pretty faithful renovation.
Yeah. And you know what? They will not talk about that they were going to renovate it and not save the paintings. They will not. They have no. Nope. Not. We're not mentioning that.
I was listening to the Mormon Line yesterday, where Emily Ott was on there, and Matthew Grow, and they asked them straight, like, "What did you think when it was announced they would gut the Manti Temple?" And they were just silent. They were just like, "Well, I can respect the confidential conversations we had with the church leaders."
Yeah, because you know, say anything. Yeah, because you know that they're like, no, don't do this. What? This is history. But they have to say, well, we discussed it and shared the importance of what these things were. They won't talk about that. Anything to do with the lawsuit with the Tykert family about Minerva Tykert and everything with that. Nothing really mentioned about Minerva herself, even in the room. They mention her, but they don't talk about, you know, her works and the other things, and they don't reference the art exhibit that you mentioned that's in downtown Salt Lake. It really is a thing. I got to the end of it, and I was talking with Emily, and I said, so how come we don't go into all of the things, right? How come we can't mention the Holy of Holies and talk about what that is? And why don't we talk about, you know, the other things that are going on? And she said, and I appreciated it, she said, really what we're doing as we share these tours is that we want to have the conversation and the focus be on Christ and the sacredness of the temple and the importance of the ordinances that are there. And I said, I can respect the heck out of that. And there are some people that just want to have the nerdy tour of this temple, you know. Can we do something like that? And she said, well, you know, it's hard because how do you know? How do you get all of those people at the same time? And, you know, are they people that are trying to come in and disprove things and all that stuff? And so I sort of got the, you know, I was blessed to be able to visit with her and the woman who, don't tell anyone I'm telling you this, throughout the temple. But it definitely is a thing that I think if you are looking for a lot of those things, you have to do your bit of research. There will be those things in the show notes that Corey mentioned, but know about it going in to be able to see and appreciate it. Otherwise, they're not going to be like, that's what this is, and the creation and the book and the, you know, person who came here and didn't know about that. They mention it sort of on a high level, to get the real depth of it. And I guess that's symbolic of the temple, right? You get out of it what you put into it. So there you go.
Yeah. Basically, the big focus of this temple, of this renovation, was to waterproof the temple from further water damage. It seemed like through the century there was a lot of water damage because the temple is set on a hill, and that, you know, water seeps through whatever material it's near. And so that wall that's next to the temple basically had a lot of water damage. So they talked about how Emily had talked about how they dug a 40-foot trench and they waterproofed and made a new foundation down there. And I think this will help preserve the building for a long time. Those staircases on that side of the temple on the hill kind of like lead up to what is the assembly room. So back in the day, you could have a meeting in the assembly room without having to go through the rest of the temple. And so I don't know, what did you think about the assembly room?
So cool. It's interesting because it was brought up about, you know, the other places that have assembly halls. There are not. And I thought that this was fashion over function, because I asked the question, if you look at the assembly room, it is the only assembly room that I have seen that does not have the various like offices of the priesthood below the altar that they would sit behind. Kirtland does, Nauvoo does, as I understand it, Salt Lake does, and also St. George did when I saw that. But I asked about it, and I said, hey, why, you know, in the other temples that I've seen, why don't they have that? And they went, well, they were going for a beautiful form, and it's got some great woodwork underneath it. And also, she said, by this time, most of the people kind of knew the hierarchy of the priesthood and understood that, whereas in the early time, Kirtland specifically, it was to kind of teach, you know, the hierarchy, et cetera, of the priesthood, the offices, the significance of the offices, et cetera. So I thought that was sort of
an interesting
answer.
To add, at that time, kind of there was a lot of reforms going on with priesthood offices. So back then, you were a deacon for life. But then by about the 1880s, things were progressing where you would progress through your priesthood offices, and then you'd have the youth become erotic priesthood people. And so just like the notion of priest offices had radically started to change at that point of history. So,
and I haven't seen, have you seen, have you seen the assembly room in the LA or DC temple?
I have seen the DC one. The DC is very modern. It's like very modern pulpits and everything. And so,
and no priesthood offices underneath.
No priesthood offices.
All right. Well, we took a long time on Manti. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We've got our temple predictions for General Conference, plus some other temple news. We'll come back and do that in the second half of the Temple Ticker.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
BestDJInUtah.com is the website. That is where you go if you would like me to come and DJ your event. Now, will I do a family reunion where you all wear the same t-shirts? You bet I will. Will I travel to wherever you're at? Uh-huh. Am I reasonable as far as what I cost? Yes. Yes. Do I bring a good time? Yeah, all the things. Listen, Best DJ in Utah, it's my company. It's a thing I do that allows me to be able to have the time to do the cultural hall. So if someone's getting married, you think, man, they need a great DJ. You're throwing a party, whether it's a 50th or 60th or 40th or 20th or whatever the party is. I've done them all and would love to be able to do that. An anniversary party, certainly done those. I did a baptism in 2023. Yeah, we did a big dance party at a baptism. Spoiler, not a Mormon baptism, but it was fun nonetheless. BestDJInUtah.com is a website. I will get back to you within 24 hours with a quote. Come on now. BestDJInUtah.com.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. Our lifetime service guarantee has become the most trusted warranty in the industry. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop computer and they start at only $29 a month. Check us out at PCLaptops.com.
Here in the second half of the Temple Ticker, I encourage you, if there's something that you would like to know about, something maybe that happens in general conference that you're like, hey, that seems Temple-ish oriented, I would love to sick Corey K. Ward, the Pharaoh himself, out to get some more information about that. You can certainly do that. Contact at theculturalhall.com. And then I'll copy and paste that or forward that over to him and sick him on trying to find some of that information. You can always find the Temple Ticker. It is in its own episode also on YouTube. Find the Cultural Hall on YouTube and subscribe. Even if you don't watch it there, subscribe because it helps the algorithm. And at some point, I'm told that if we get like a certain amount, we can click on a little thing and we can start to make money. find the Cultural Hall on YouTube. We go now to Urdaneta. I don't know how you say it. The Philippines.
I think that's how you say it. So yeah, I'm a little bit overshadowed by the open house of the Manti Temple, but the same day, basically, the day after, technically, the Urdaneta Philippines Temple opened up for tours, and they released the interior photos. So, you know, compared to the Manti Temple, it's fine, I guess, I would say. But yeah, this temple's like 13 years in the making. It was announced in 2010, so it's been a long time since we have people have been waiting for this. The tours continue through March 30th. They use kind of a granite exterior from China. And then they used a lot of the national flower of the Philippines, which is the sempaguita, I guess. And a lot of the designs of the temple reflect kind of the Asian and Spanish heritage that the islands have. And so, yeah, it's a nice temple.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I mean, to add to what you said, it's that there's just not a way you can compare a brand new temple in the Philippines to a Manti temple as far as its significance to the church, its significance to the people. It's a long way in the coming. I'm certainly sure for the people there, you know, very, very important, but it's just not it in the same sentence. It's hard to,
if you're a nerdy architectural nerd, then yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Mexico, we had a groundbreaking.
Yeah, the San Luis Potosi Temple had a groundbreaking. It was on March 9th, presided by Sean Douglas. It's going to be one of 24 temples that are planned or existing in Mexico. They said they're going to serve people not just in San Luis Potosi, but also in Aguascalientes, Fresnillo, Zacatecas, and as well as the city of León. And right now, people travel to Mexico City or Guadalajara, which is like 8 hours away. So this temple will be a big blessing for them.
Now, who is Sean Douglas? Because it's not, you don't put Elder Sean Douglas, and I'm assuming
I should.
Elder Douglas, but you're like, it's presided by, who do we got?
He's in the Mexico, Mexico area presidency.
Okay.
So he's
okay.
One of the general authorities assigned to live in Mexico.
Okay. All right. Then we traveled to Samoa. I thought this, the site was particularly interesting in Samoa.
Yeah, I think it's called Savi, Samoa. Basically, Samoa has two main islands. There's been a long time in Apia, and now there's some in Savi. There's a 5-acre site in Bataloa, is what it's called, next to the Salaloa village, basically on the southeastern part of the island. What's interesting about this site is that I actually saw this site. It showed up on the church's meeting house locator a few months ago. So I was like, is that the temple site? And yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So they're going to build a temple that's about 30,000 square foot there.
And Samoa, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. Samoa is the most like per capita members of the church, right? Isn't it the highest?
It's close. It's actually Tonga.
Oh, Tonga. Okay.
And then I think afterwards it's Samoa.
But 165 congregations, 88,000 people in Samoa. It's pretty incredible. Yeah,
I think it's like 30, if you were to count everyone, it's like 30% of the country.
Yes. And then some new presidents and matrons for new temples.
Yeah, this is an indication that these temples are coming towards completion. The San Pedro Sula Honduras Temple. There's a couple from Tegucigalpa on the other side of the country that's going to be presiding over this temple. I'm sure they've been temple workers in the temple there So they'll bring their experience to this new temple. And then Antofagasta, Chile, a couple from Antofagasta will be the temple's animation for this new temple.
Which is the way that it should be. You know, the more that we don't have, we brought in the Christiansens from Salt Lake City to be, especially in a lot of these, really. I know that
Yeah.
that's the way that the church wants it, and really, quite honestly, the way that I think that it should be. I know that there's some places that we have to do it that way, but there is nothing that makes me more. There's no such thing as righteous pride. Proud of like the church is when you look at temple in blank and the people that are in the picture look like they are from blank, as opposed to, you know, the Smiths from Logan who came down to wherever to be this. I that's significant too, and a huge shift that's happened in the last 20, 30 years. Vancouver, Washington Temple, people don't like it.
We talked about this last time that they announced their site. The local newspaper there said that the church bought it for $8.25 million. Records show. And you know, they interviewed some neighbors and people are kind of like, oh, I like to walk over there. I like the forest. And so be a tough change for them. We'll see if they get my top position when they start to build the temple.
And then Modesto, this was interesting.
Yeah, there's a some local coverage of the temple that's under construction. There's a one of those construction trailers where there's some senior missionaries that will tell you about the temple, and they're also gonna make cookies every Wednesday for the construction workers.
Now, what I don't know, and I don't know that the article said, do we know, are they from scratch? Do we know if it's different flavors every week? Can they share a recipe? I'd actually, as much as I'm joking, I actually would like to know that. If we're going to talk about bringing cookies to the people, give me some more particulars on this.
You'll have to get them on the cultural hall, I guess.
I'll do it. I'll do it. We continue to, in our news fetchers every day, the Kirtland Temple acquisition by the church still continues to show up. Is there anything new that has come out since we did that particular episode? People can find that in our sort of archives where we talk about the acquisition of the Kirtland Temple, but any further reactions?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some people pointing out like the 15-year clause, I guess, of the agreement that the church agrees to keep it open to the public for 15 years. And so people are like, what's going to happen after 15 years? One of the historians that was on Mormon land, Matt Grove, he said that, the church intends to keep it that way. So, it's pretty, looks like a good agreement. Although there's some, a little bit of suspicion there, but, we'll have to see what happens. But this will be Elder Bednar's decision, what happens, I guess, in 15 years.
And to be a little bit more clear about it, so the clause essentially says it'll be open as oh, it's not going to be closed off. It's going to be allowed for the public to be able to come in for 15 years, and then we intend to continue to do it. And my speculation is that in 15 years, because of the other thing that Emily said within that Mormonland interview, and I think you've linked to that interview in our show notes, so people can check that out. I think that in 15 years, they'll go, listen, this is what we need to do to shore up this building. And they'll put some yellow tape out front and they'll say, closed for a little bit. We're gonna fix this up. There's not much been done to that particular building since it was built. And you know, it's one good earthquake. Not that I don't think Ohio really has a lot of earthquakes. Maybe they do. I live
I think
there. I have a
recently
good
they did
experience
have
there.
one
Oh, really?
a few, like maybe a decade ago, and that concerned a lot of people about what the temple would be. So,
Yeah.
but they're a lot rarer and probably not as big, I guess.
Yeah. So the hope is, or my hope is that in 15 years' time, they go, listen, we've assessed, we've looked, we know what we need to do, and they can get in and do it quickly and shore up that building. Because I mean, it's pretty significant as people will continue to learn and as people have learned about what went on there. I hope everyone takes the opportunity to go and check it out. It's pretty significant for me too, in my like testimony building of the church. I don't know that I knew really before I got to Kirtland that I was like, yeah, church, I'm in. But then being able to be there to serve there and some pretty special experiences in the town of Kirtland that I went, okay, I'm going to get excommunicated in my 20s for 10 years, but I'll be back. You know,
Nice.
quite honestly, because of some of the feelings that I had that were there, I was like, well, like, you know, I don't know that I prefer the excommunication thing, but I know that I'll be back. And a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it is due to some of the experiences that I had there. So anything else that is sort of interesting about?
Well, I'll just think some podcasts that are pretty good. Inside Out, which is a one by Jim Bennett and Ian Wilkes. They had a pretty good take on the acquisition. John C. Hamer, he leads a Community of Christ congregation out of Toronto and has a pretty big viewing on YouTube. He had a reaction about this, kind of like almost like a mourning for Community of Christ. And then there's a live by former guest of the Culture Hall, Brooke Bennett from Gospel Tangents. He talked about he attended a Zoom meeting where the first presidency of the Community of Christ had like just a question answer session with random people. And he talked about like what was being asked, why didn't they have common consent in this? And basically the answer was that, like, we had to do this now. Like, we didn't have time. We needed these resources. And we were afraid that if we were to have a discussion about this with the whole church, that it would just kind of devolve into a lot of striking disagreements. So,
well, and as I understand it, just a little bit further on that, like, it really is a move that it's like, if this church is going to survive, we have to do this. We don't have the ability to go forward in any other way because tithes have dwindled and you know, other various things along that line. They were like, this is survival. We are selling these things.
Yeah. And then something that I forgot to mention that I linked on the last one, but I didn't talk about it, was that a few years ago, I made a map of all the property in Nauvoo, just to show how much the church owns, the Elliott Church owns in Nauvoo. And basically what the Community of Christ owns, and then basically everything except the Smith Family Cemetery, the Community of Christ congregation, and then the Camp Nauvoo is being turned over to the church. And so it'd be interesting to see, you know, just how big the church piece of land in Nauvoo is. It's like half the town, literally. The church could build Disneyland in Nauvoo, and they'd have enough property for it.
Wow. Maybe they will. Joseph Land.
Joseph.
I don't know. The city of Joseph. And then they can sing that song. The It's a Small World can be the equivalent of that city of Joseph song. I've sung it for you before. I'm not singing again. Nice try. I'm not doing that again. City of Joseph, city, beautiful city of Joseph, Nauvoo. I sent you this story. I thought that it was interesting about the church acquiring land to build a Central Africa area office in Nairobi. Boy, that's a lot. Let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah. So the church, you know, I think 2 years ago, organized a new area, which hasn't happened in a long time, basically split Africa from two areas to three, just to provide more attention and administrative support for the growing church there in East Africa. So I guess they acquired land so they can build an office. It's kind of nearby the mission office, which I always thought that they were, right now they're building a temple in Nairobi and they have a big, large patron housing office building. I thought maybe they just stick the offices in there, but I guess they're going to get their own offices over here.
Well, and significant, if you've listened to episode 780 of the Cultural Hall, I visit with one of the PR folks for Africa. And, you know, he alludes, though, couldn't confirm because that's how we are, that like it's three areas now, but very soon it will become four areas. And by the time that it's done, I mean, Africa is such a large in geography location, like to be able to have these different hubs and focuses. I mean, I imagine even as many as like half a dozen to be able to say, we're here, there's one here, this is the Northwest, this is the Northeast mission, this or area of Africa. But because we're still sort of early in the continent, that those things are coming along. I also thought interesting this about Venezuela, where it's like, Venezuela, I know you want to be a part of South America, the South America area, but too bad, we're putting you a part of the Caribbean or Caribbean, depending on how you pronounce it.
Yeah, it was part of this South America Northwest area. And I guess just to provide, to balance out the areas a little bit better, because the one in South America was gigantic and the one in the Caribbean was pretty small. And so basically it's going to double the size of the Caribbean area for number of stakes in Venezuela. What's interesting right now is that the Caribbean area is the only area of the church that doesn't have a temple that's announced or under construction.
So I'm betting we're going to hear more about that as we get to the temple predictions. There aren't missionaries in Venezuela, though, right now, not non-native. missionaries.
There's four missions right now in Venezuela, but they're all staffed by Venezuelans.
Yeah, yeah, because there aren't any Americans headed down to Venezuela. That is not a safe situation with the government still being as it is down there. Okay, here we go. So the General Conference tempo predictions, I will make sure that these are available. Last General Conference, I messed up. I didn't get the bracket in time that people could actually, you know, do their own tempo bracket. Matt Martinich has a map. Tell everybody who Matt Martinich is and about the map.
Yeah, he just he studies church growth as a side hobby, but has been blogging about it for like 15 years. And he has a map of about like 150 different sites that he thinks that a temple could be built. So yeah, it's definitely a good place to go to have a debate with everyone there. There's a site called the Temple Matrix, where the church has, where a guy has basically aggregated all the guesses that people have made on his blog and have like shown like what's the most predicted sites and everything. And so if you want like a betting average, I guess you could go to this site.
Hmm. It's interesting. I'm sort of looking over his and then obviously bringing him back to you. Let's hear your, if you had to say, this is the for sure, this is the one, point to the outfield, Babe Ruth of temples. If this is the one that you're like, this one is happening for sure, where is it?
Well, it was pointed out on this blog that property was recently acquired in Cincinnati, Ohio, in the town of Mason, which is right in between Cincinnati and Dayton. It's about 50 or 35 acres, actually. So I would say that's a pretty good big bet at Cincinnati.
Okay. Okay. That's your one that you're saying, okay, for sure. Let's go through some of the other places that you're thinking that you might see. And obviously some of these you'll see from Matt's predictions, but some of these I think are your own.
Sure. I think President Nelson has never announced a temple in Arizona. So I think they're kind of falling behind. So I would predict one maybe in the northern part of the state, like in Flagstaff, maybe Prescott.
Okay.
You know, Utah hasn't had one announced in a while with all these dedications. Maybe they'll.
Yeah, we're so neglected. We are so neglected here in Utah. Poor us. But you're thinking this conference will be a couple of Utah ones.
It could be. Maybe Harriman. We talked about Lehigh, the one in the Traverse Mountain area. But maybe Spanish Fork. Maybe Price, even.
Hmm.
Maybe Utah adjacent, Evanston, Wyoming, that part of Wyoming. Currently goes to Ogden, so.
Oh yeah, interesting. They could go to Logan too. That is an interesting thing. I the Price prediction makes sense to me because you're going to Payson probably, if that's in the center of the state of Utah. I'll go Price. I'll invest in Price. I think Lehigh. Someone told me the other day they think Cottonwood Heights. There is a parcel of land that is just above on the east bench of the Salt Lake Valley. And they think, hey, you know what? Now's the time, and it's going to take several years to do that. They think Cottonwood Heights is on the docket for this general conference.
Yeah, I know where that is as well. So
yeah, and it's a gorgeous place. Wouldn't it be incredible to have the temple there? But Texas, you think they're going to get another one too?
Maybe like in El Paso, because there's a temple right now in Juarez, but you know, it's hard for a lot of people to cross the border. So definitely there's four stakes there that could use a temple. Even in South Houston, we've had Dallas have three temples now, and Houston only has one. Hmm. In similar sized metro areas, so maybe another one in Houston.
And
Honolulu.
Yeah, tell me about this. Just because La'ie is on the North Shore and it's so far, and there's what, a lot of people in Honolulu?
Yeah, so recently we saw in Canada the historic temple in Cardston. It was supported by people in Lethbridge for a long time, and recently a temple was announced there, and so it's going to basically. The historic temple there in Cardston is going to go down to like four stakes.
Mm.
And so I think pretty similar in La'ie, this temple could probably just be supported by the people in North Shore, the BYU Hawaii people that are visiting on vacation. And then there's like four or five stakes in Honolulu that could probably also use a temple. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens.
Hmm. Dominican Republic?
Yeah, we talked about there's currently... No ones in the Caribbean announced. So I think the best bet is in the north part of the Dominican Republic in the city of Santiago. But you may also see one maybe in Jamaica. That would be interesting.
El Salvador.
Yeah. Santa Ana in Salvador would be the second temple in this country. There's lots of stakes in that area.
Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Peru, Lima, a number three. Come on, what are we doing here? Are you just you get a temple and you get a temple and you get a temple? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of sites in Brazil that could use one. Maybe I predict maybe a third stake is going to be created in Medellin, Colombia. So that would be interesting to see if that third stake kind of triggers some sort of temple warrant. I don't know. And then that new temple was built in Lima this year, dedicated. But I think Lima is so big that it could probably use a third temple.
Uganda, just because of the church growth in Kampala.
Yeah, it's the country with the most members without a temple right now. So it's been on my list for a long time. So we'll see if it happens this time.
Yeah, I like that one. Glasgow, Scotland, and that's because of availability of a temple, not because of huge church growth, I would imagine.
Yeah, but in European terms, this is like the area of the church with the most members in Europe that doesn't have a temple yet. So.
Taiwan?
Yeah, we recently talked about a temple that's being constructed in the south of the country in Kaohsiung. But you know, maybe that before, you know, maybe there's a little bit of angst if Taiwan is ever taken over by mainland China. Maybe it would be nice to get another temple into Taichung. I don't know.
And where is Hobart in Australia?
It's in the island of Tasmania, way on the south. There's two stakes down there. Currently have to fly to Melbourne. If you want to go to the temple.
Yeah, so you could do a pretty small temple there. And then your wild card in Venezuela, is that location in Venezuela the wild card, or is it Venezuela is the wild card?
I think just Venezuela would be amazing. It would be like similar to the China or the Dubai temple announcements. I think one in Maracaibo. It's the city with the most stakes in Venezuela without a temple, and probably like 20 years ago, President Hinckley visited that temple, that city, and he said one day he wants to see a temple there. So it'd be interesting to see if the church could swing something like that.
So you have, if I'm doing a quick count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, you have like 17. Do you think it's going to be that many temples? How many do you think are going to be announced at General Conference?
I think as we predicted, we're on pace to 500 by 2030, so you have to do about 15 every conference.
So over or under 15?
I'll say under this time.
Okay, I'm going to say over, and I'm going to say over. How many have been announced as the most? 20?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm saying over 20. I'm saying we're going to come out and go. I mean it. I think we're going to see more in the spring and less in the fall. I think we're going to say it's spring, it's growth, it's awakening, it's all the things. 21. Is what I'm going to say. And know that if there are any at all, there will be a special post-conference announcement of the temples and where they're at and the significance to those people, obviously. And so people can look forward to that. Be sure you subscribe to the Culture Hall so you find us in all the places and when those things get posted. I should also say, because this is the last episode before Holy Week, that every day for Holy Week, we are going to get episodes from Carrie Muhlstein about the significance of the various days. So look forward to a ton of Cultural Hall episodes next week about Holy Week and be able to make that a part of your worship service as we gather towards Easter. Corey, thank you for the very, very hard work that you have done in doing this. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
We hope that if you're sick or couldn't attend, you'll be able to listen next time.
And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, Chris at Alpine Lakes Travel, Rick McGee, Debbie Wanless, Chocolate Cake Bites Podcast, and the Tiger with a U will be saving a seat for you
on the back row
of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.